Okay, let's get into the lesson. How many of y'all have ever heard of Herbert W. Armstrong? Anybody? Yeah, there's two or three, four of you. Yeah. Well, Herbert W. Armstrong was a Sabbath keeper. He belonged to the Church of God, and he had a radio program in about the 60s, 70s. And man, in 30 minutes, he could take you from Genesis through Revelation. Well, that's what we're going to do in this class today. Now, I had an experience this week, and most of the time, believe it or not, I'm fairly self-confident that I always do the right thing, but on this one, I wasn't real sure. So I'm going to run the experience by you, and then you tell me if I did good or bad, okay? Is that fair enough? Saw a guy on the road there in Burleson, and he was on the side of the road, and I don't know, I just stopped and got out of my car, and I went up to him and I said, "Sir, you seem to be having problems. What's wrong?" And he said, "Well, I'm really hungry." And I said, "Well, okay, I can understand that." I said, "Do you see that vacant lot about a half a block from here over on the left?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, I got good news for you. In 2,300 days from now, they're going to build a restaurant." Now, the 2,300 days could be 2,300 years. I'm not positive. But in 2,300 something, they're going to build a restaurant. And they're going to do nothing but vegetarian, healthy food. But there's going to be a little bighorn that's going to rise in the restaurant, and there's going to be a chef that comes out and he's going to cook nothing but unhealthy food. But in the back room, there's going to be this other chef, and he's going to cook good food, and he's going to give it to you for free. So if you can just hang in there for 2,300 days, or possibly 2,300 years from now, there'll be a restaurant so that you can eat. Now, how did I do? What would you say about that?
You're dreaming.
Yeah, you'd say you're nuts. The guy's hungry. What's the obvious answer? Give him something to eat. Now, that's exactly what we do for people in Daniel and people in Revelation. They're sitting there begging for good news. And according to us, God comes along and he tells the hungry guy about a restaurant that's going to be 2,300 days or maybe 2,300 years in the future. And the people in Daniel walk away and say, "What is this? Now, you just told me that I was nuts, right? Well, then wouldn't God fit into that as being a little nutty?" Got to remember, we're looking at two principles. Principle number one, the book of Daniel and Revelation were written for the people in Daniel's time and in Revelation's time to read. And second principle we have to look at is we've got to figure out what that message is, because I would assume that that message would be important in our day. So let's go back and look at Daniel, then we're going to get to Revelation today also. When Daniel had the visions, where were the children of Israel?
Captivity.
And so Daniel's praying, "Lord, do something." Now, doesn't that sound like a good prayer? Do something. And so God comes down and gives them an interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream about the four empires and the stone that breaks the feet. And then he gives them a talk about 2300 days, and then the sanctuary shall be cleansed. Now, what in the world would that have meant to the captives in Babylon? Nothing. Except it does. Because we have to look at the big picture. Now, last week I challenged you to, when you read Daniel and you read Revelation, and that goes for the entire Bible, are you studying to learn or are you studying to confirm what you already believe? So when we look at Daniel, are we looking to learn or are we looking to confirm what we already know? Do you realize that we have been at this task of sending out the message to the world for 174 years? Now, who can give me a definition of insanity? What is the old saying? Now, I'm not going to say that the Seventh-day Adventist organization is insane, because I don't make statements like that. I will simply say they do the same thing over and over and over and over, and what do they expect? We can take evangelistic sermons from this last few years and go back and see the same sermons in the 1950s. Eloise, you've been around a long time. Am I far off? No. Pardon?
It's the preacher in Waxahachie is taking the old sermons and almost reading them verbatim from Dick Barron and
Bill May. And we preach the same thing. And we take great pride in it. So let's look at the people, the children of Israel, in captivity in Babylon. Now, what if the three angels' message had came to the children of Israel in Babylon? What's the second angel's message? What's fallen?
Babylon.
Oh, they say, we understand that one. We're here. What do you think they would have come across if Revelation was given to the children of Israel in Daniel's time that no man could buy or sell? Hey, we understand that. We can't buy or sell nothing. We're slaves. So where is the good news of the 2300-day prophecy? If you're a captive and a slave in Babylon, tell me, how would that be good news for you? Who cares? If a Babylonian is kicking the mess out of you, whipping you, and you got word that you've just been dying to hear from God, and He tells you something's going to happen 2,300 days or 2,300 years from now, what would be your opinion? That's interesting, but I sure wish this guy would quit whipping me. So, how does the 2,300 days fit in? Because it's there. Well, let's look at the big picture. First of all, if the children of Israel were a Bible student, was there any hope while they were in captivity that they were going to be delivered. Who knows? Because there was. Who knows? Anybody? What did Jeremiah forecast? That there was going to be a man named Cyrus that would do what? Huh? Pardon?
Overthrow.
Freedom.
Send them back. They had a definite word that their captivity was not forever. That a man by name, Cyrus, would have a decree to send them back home. And by the way, Daniel went and showed Cyrus that. Cyrus, I think you ought to let our guys go back home. Oh, don't know about that. Well, let me help you. Bring in the scroll. And there it was. Now, if you're in captivity and you're God's chosen people, what would be an obvious question theologically that you would be concerned with? What would be the thing that would come to your mind in reality? We're talking reality. What would be the one question you would ask of God? What would it be? Pardon?
When?
Yeah, why? When? What you gonna do? Where are you? This thing's gone amiss. That, by the way, is a question that's been asked through eternity. So here are the children of Israel, God's chosen people, in Babylon, slaves. Thank you, Hezekiah. Causing Hezekiah, instead of telling everybody how great God was, he said, let me show you all the richness we have in our temple. And the Babylonians went back to Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar said, hey, I sent you to find out about their God. What did you find out about? And they said, well, really, we found out nothing about him. But man, you ought to see all that gold and silver they've got there in their temple. And Nebuchadnezzar said, let's go get it. Do you realize that God had prophesied through the prophets that the Babylonians, if Israel did not change its way, the Babylonians were going to come in and capture them? It was right there. He forewarned them. But they were so caught up in what they were doing, they were so caught up in that they were God's people, they were so caught up in that they knew everything from the Scriptures, that they paid no attention to any of the signs. Could that sound familiar today? Rhetorical question. And so here the Babylonians come in and capture them. Take them. They were going to be there for 70 years. The Scripture had told them that. And so Daniel reminds Cyrus. He reminds his people. Then God comes and gives Nebuchadnezzar a vision. And Daniel interprets it. Then he talks about the 2300 days. What's the good news in that? There is some good news. Good news for us? Maybe. Good news for the children of Israel caught up in captivity? Absolutely good news. Because what does the image with the four empires and the 2300 days or a day prophecy, year prophecy, half year, because there are some that says, the actual text says even in 2300 evening and mornings, which some interpret to be 1250 days. How could that be good news to a bunch of people that's in captivity? Well, let me tell you. You ever gone through anything that's just a personal tragedy? Certainly. Ever wondered why? Certainly. If you didn't, something's wrong with you. Did you ever question? Certainly. But what is the most calming thing that you can have and be aware of as you go through all of these personal tragedies and problems and trials? What's the most comforting thing that you can know? That's not a rhetorical question. Somebody give me an answer. Huh?
That God is in control.
That God's in control. That God's in control. Ask Job. Ask a lot of people. And so God came down in the book of Daniel and told Daniel, remember my prophecy? You're only going to be here 70 years. Remember how I told you? Cyrus is going to let you go. Oh, I know it hurts right now. I know you're going through some bad times, but the end is in sight. That was important to them then. But God, being who God is, says, and I want to share with you something that's important. I know how all of these kingdoms are going to work. In fact, I'm in such control that I know how 2,300 days, 1,250 days, 2,300 years, all of that, I'm in control. And you have nothing to fear. Trust me. Because that's the only reassurance you have in your life as you go through your captivity, whatever it is that God is in control. Trusting. He knows what tomorrow. I used to say, and I still like to say it, I cannot undo to yesterday. And I don't worry about tomorrow because God is working on tomorrow in my life. All I have is today. And God is saying in the 2300, what we should get from the 2300 day prophecy is very simple. God is in control. Now, how we come along and interpret it, who cares in the big picture? Because it means nothing if you don't know God. There's a guy, and I don't know him, so I can be very open. There's a guy over in Richardson that has just come out, and people are so excited about it that he's got his graft. And he's got his charts. I mean, I'm talking about the last 2-3 weeks. And guess where we're at in Earl's history? Guess where we're at in the world's history in his chart? The midnight. 60 years ago, I heard that. Minutes to midnight. You see, Daniel, the children of Israel, they knew who the big horn power was. Babylon! They're the ones that's kicking the crap out of us every day. So we know who the big horn power is. And we certainly can't buy and sell. Children of Israel in Egypt. If revelation would have been given to the children in Egypt, guess who they would have thought the big horn power was? Egyptians! Because they couldn't buy and sell. The parallels is always there. We come along And we want it to fit. That's why it's important. Are you studying to learn or are you studying to confirm? Let me give you an example. I don't care what evangelistic series you go to. I haven't been in any in the last 4 or 5 years, thank goodness. But I don't care what you go to. When you come to Daniel, and Daniel says, and they're going to be running to and fro, and knowledge is going to be increased. How do they interpret that? Yeah.
Computer, internet.
Oh, man, everybody's running to and fro. But can you imagine in 1864, they preached, oh, running to and fro. Well, the Pony Express now can get across the country in 5 days. It's the time of the end. 1885. Wow, we can get across the United States in about 300 days in a wagon train. The time of the... Oh my goodness, a locomotive has come along. And now we can... Well, it's the time of the... Oh, we got a car. Wow. Oh, we got an airplane. Wow, the time of the... Oh, we got a rocket. That's not what the text says in context. But we want to prove that we're a church that's got it all together. And we want to prove that there's only two choices. It's our nice church or that other church. Show me in the 66 books at any time in God dealing with this person, people, that was an issue. Show me in the 66 books where the Sabbath at any time was an issue. Read Daniel in context. The question in context is, God, who are you? What is your character? What are you like? And the answer comes as we get closer down the road. Men are going to run to and fro. Men are going to go anywhere they can to try to find out who God is. Why is there God? And in the time of the end, the knowledge about God will be increased. It's the message we need to be preaching. It's all about God. Not about a day, not about a time, not about cars, not about fast travel. It's all about God. And people today are going to and fro looking about God. They're going on all kinds of tangents. Why are we bored? Why are we here? The atheists say, well, we come from a mountain. Agnostic says, I haven't got no idea. 2300 days. If you go with a traditional Seventh-day Adventist understanding of the 2300 days, I have no problems with that. It fits. I just don't think it's the message. See, we can prove the 2300 days, but what does that do to change? You just told me if a guy's hungry, you feed him. I say if a person's looking for God, feed him. Don't give him a bunch of charts. '44 was a tremendous disappointment. And when you have disappointments, what's the natural thing to do? Think about this. Something goes wrong, what's the natural thing to do?
Find out why.
Find out why, and do what with it?
Come up with an excuse.
Correct it.
Yeah.
Blame somebody.
Yeah. Blame somebody, figure out something. And so in 1844, we thought Jesus was coming. He didn't come. So they had to go figure out something. And so they figured out that Jesus moved from one place, the sanctuary, to the other place. Just stop and think about that. What did Stephen say when he was getting stoned that made the Jews so mad that they continued to stone him harder? I look into heaven, and where did he see Jesus? The right hand of God. Well, I didn't think that he went into the most holy place until 1844. I mean, just be logical. Who in the world is going to put God in a compartment? And then John comes along in John 20, in Revelation 21, and he says something of interest. I looked into heaven, and there was no temple there. None. Nada. Didn't know I could speak many languages. Because El Shaddai himself was there. If God's there, you don't need a temple. You don't need a sanctuary. You don't need a most holy place. You don't need a courtyard. That was a flannograph story for us. Now, I went to get my taxes done the other day. And I went to a CPA. And said, well, let's go over my taxes. And she pulled out two ledger books. They were green. Remember the green ones? And she says, well, let me look over your account. What do you think I would have done? What would you have done? Your accountant pulls out green ledger books.
Go to a different accountant.
Get a different accountant. But yet that's what we ascribe to God. Well, I wonder how I like to pick on Rick because he's so easy to pick on. Yeah. Well, I wonder what old Rick Doss is up to. Gabriel, yes, sir. Bring me the ledger book. My goodness, do you think that's for God? Or is it for our dumb minds? That's the only thing that we can grasp. Had an interesting experience on the Super Bowl. For some reason, I got mixed up, and I started, because I always tape everything, but I started for some reason, the Super Bowl 2 hours later, after it already started, but I thought I was in real time. And about an hour into the game, I heard a bunch of people outside shouting and whooping up. And I was in Philadelphia at the time. And a lot of people shouting and deal. But I'm sitting there watching the game, and wringing my hands, and oh my goodness, they just fumbled. Are they going to be able to pull this? And it just got louder and louder out there. And at halftime, I'm sitting there thinking, oh man, they ought to make this adjustment. They ought to make this. And outside, I keep hearing horns and blares and people singing and shouting and everything. And then in the third quarter, Philadelphia fumbled, and I thought, oh, this is going to be the end of the game. And then the fourth quarter, Tom Brady got the ball, and he was only like 6 points down. Oh, here it comes. And everybody's shouting. And finally somebody burst into the room and said, wow, what do you think? Philadelphia won. I said, can't be. I'm there here watching it. Do you understand that's what the book of Revelation is all about? We're watching a tape delay version. And we're wringing our hands. Oh, Is God going to be able to pull this out? Oh, this time of trouble. Ooh. And all ever time John looked to heaven, they were celebrating, worshiping. The universe was celebrating. Everybody in the universe was celebrating God's victory. Except us. Oh, the Pope talked to the Senate today. Oh, my, my. Oh, what are we going to do? God has won. He is in control. Revelation was meant to help the people that heard it read. They didn't care about the seven churches and what period of history. They didn't care. The little bighorn. Oh, we know who that is. That's Rome, not papal Rome, because it didn't even exist. It's Rome. It's those Romans that are beating the devil out of us. We can't buy and sell. Do you understand in the 70s and the 80s, the Christians were a little cultural. They were hiding out. People had to bring them food. They couldn't go out and buy food and expose themselves. They were hiding. Very secretive. So when they heard about a beast, we said, we know that one. That's some Romans. We can't buy and sell. Hey, that's us. And God said, it's war in heaven. The issue is, are you going to follow me or are you going to follow Satan? And man, Satan is going to be good. He's got all kinds of deceptions coming along your way. And there is going to be persecution. You're going through it. Ask the Waldenses who hid out into the mountains. They could have said, man, this is the time of the end. But the message of Revelation is the message of Daniel. God is in control. And He wins. There's not one of you here in this class that thinks you can be deceived in the end. Am I correct? Well, there wasn't a Pharisee that thought he could be deceived either. And he knew the Bible better than you. He knew the Bible better than me. We're God's chosen people. We're special. We understand the Scriptures. We know how to chart them out. And we certainly know the Messiah's coming. Tap, tap, tap on the Pharisee's shoulder, and he turns around and says, hi, I'm Jesus. I'm the Messiah. Ha, ha, ha! Happened in 1888 to our organization. Tap on the shoulder to the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists. I have a message about Jesus. And they said, ha, ha, ha. The only way we're going to be deceived is if we have the wrong picture of God. I remember, you know, was being told that Satan's going to impersonate the coming of Jesus. What was the one sign that was going to separate Jesus and Satan?
Couldn't touch the ground.
Wasn't going to touch the ground. That devil must be the most stupidest person in the universe. Because all we were going to do is sit there. In fact, I'm just going to sit down. Sit there And we're looking at that ground. The man, if those feet touch that ground, we know. Uh-oh! I think his big toe hit it.
That's the Antichrist.
Is that the best that we have to offer the universe about the God who loves us? Is that the best we have to offer to a person that is hungry? Starving to know about God? And we pull out the charts. I think something did happen in 1844. I think it has absolutely nothing to do with the heavenly sanctuary because... better go no further. This is taped. I certainly wouldn't say that there wasn't one up there. You know where the sanctuary, I believe, is? Where God always wanted him. From the very beginning where he wanted him. It's your heart. You see, if you read the scriptures to confirm that there's a heavenly sanctuary, then you can go find the text and make them fit. If you read the word from beginning to end that God has said, I always wanted to dwell with you one-on-one. And the sanctuary is where God dwells. And he says, I want to dwell in your heart. And then we come along with something in 1844 that I think that did happen that's important. I think that the next step in the revelation of who God is began. And we've hindered it with an investigative judgment where Jesus stands before God and pleads for our life. That is heresy. What a picture of God. But as God moved after 1844, we have our movement. Doesn't mean we have everything right. We've been at this 175 years next year. And what, by the way, what is the big thing that is going on in the General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventists for the last 2 to 3, 4 years?
Worried about women's ordination.
Women's ordination. The universe here is saying, I'm hungry. I'm hungry. I'm starving. And we're saying, we'll get to you as soon as we figure out this women's ordination mess.
We've got to get that figured out.
We've got to get that figured out. That is nuts. The devil doesn't care what we do as long as we are not showing the character of how much God loves a person. Anything short of that, he could care less. And if we're going to sit here and manipulate, if that's a fair word, because that has been the acquisition. Somebody said that we... Stay away from them three-syllable words or killers. Somebody has said, you know, it'd been manipulated to get the vote correct. I mean, who cares? A guy saying, I'm hungry. We say, well, we got to figure these things out. Then we're going to get around and feed you spiritually. As soon as we can figure out if a woman can do it or a man can do it or if a woman needs to be ordained to do it, but the man should be ordained, but the woman not be ordained, but we'll let the woman do it, but she just can't be an ordained person. Wow. And then we wonder why Jesus hadn't come. Daniel, Revelation. Let me give you another example. Tower of Babel. What was the sin for the guys that wanted to build that tower?
To save themselves.
Yeah. Which implies what? Who did they not trust?
God.
Yeah. What did God say after the flood?
There would be another one.
That's pretty definite. Never ever be. And then he says, I'm going to prove it to you. I'm going to give you a rainbow. Every time you see the rainbow, think about me and my promise. And what did the people in Babel do?
Tower.
We don't believe you. What was Adam and Eve sin in the Garden of Eden? We don't believe you. What was the children of Israel's captivity and by the Babylonians that was prophesied that the Babylonians were going to take them? We don't believe you. And what's going to do the message in the last days? We don't believe you. And so God had said to Noah, remember he started all over. Now he's got eight good people. And what did one of them pretty well immediately do? When God drunk. So now we're down to seven good people. Not really. And so they begin to have children, and God said, I want you to multiply, be fruitful, and multiply, and spread out. Do all of these things. And now all of a sudden in the Tower of Babel, they decided instead of spreading out, they wanted to come together. And then they said, you see, the issue is always, can God be trusted? What did Satan say in heaven? God is withholding from you. What did he say to the Garden of Eden? God is withholding from you. What did he say at the Tower of Babel? God is withholding for you. Well, let's build a deal. And so then the languages were confused. They had to go out. And then God has an answer. Every time there's a problem, God has an answer. Why? Because he's in control. And he goes finds Abram. And says, Abram, pack up, move over here. And I'm going to make a great nation of you. So God says, I had a flood. I had eight people. They didn't get the job done on glorifying me. So now I'm going to try a different tactic. Abraham. Genesis 50. The children of Israel were enslaved for 400 years in Egypt. And Joseph is about to die. And he brings his sons together. And he tells them, God is going to take you one day to a promised land. Promise me that my bones will be carried and buried. It was 400 years later. But Joseph knew who was in control. And so we get to Revelation. The game's over. We're watching a tape. God wins. He is in control. Yes, there's going to be problems. But the only way to get through the problems is to know Him. Rely on Him. Because He is the source of life. He is the source of power. Take the 2300 days. Do whatever you want to do with it. The message is God is moving. And he is in control. He has won, and he's coming back to get us. Father in heaven, thank you for your love, your graciousness, your kindness, your patience. I so appreciate this class. Help us to continually to take and read and reread and look and find out the light that you have for us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.